Roll AGP.
Oh, there it goes. All right.
All right, are we rolling AGP?
Yeah, good to go.
All right. Let's see. Today, what is today? Thursday, October 3rd. It's 5:30 p.m. This is the Harbor Advisory Board. And we'll go ahead and get started and establish a quorum and call to order. Go ahead and take roll. Member Green?
Here.
Member Vail?
Here.
Member Manhattan?
Here.
Member Dowdy? O'Brien?
Sorry. Here.
Member Dowdy?
Here.
Member Myers present. We do have a quorum. With that, this beautiful fall day here in Morro Bay, we're blessed here to have this beautiful weather here in October. There's a few folks on the East Coast that are not having such a good time at the moment. And with that, we'll just have a moment of silence. All right, thank you. Next up, Pledge of Allegiance. All right. Next up is the announcements. We'll start with the one that's coming up most closely here, the Maritime Family Fun events. Member Vail?
Charisse can follow up with the rest of the events from that weekend, but there are a couple of things coming up through the Morro Bay Maritime Museum. One is a fundraiser, which everybody's invited to, but unfortunately it costs $115. But it is called Rock the Waterfront. It's our third year doing it. It's from 5:30 to 8 p.m. on October 10th. Lots of food, lots of information, and a band at the Morro Bay Yacht Club. They call it heavy hors d'oeuvres. Mm-hmm. I think that's an oxymoron. The other thing is, on the same weekend, on Sunday, October 12th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., is the third running of the Maritime Family Fun Day. If you haven't been, go. It's free. There's food. There's a guy who comes down and teaches kids to build sandcastles. The Salinan Indians come down and teach kids to make wrist cuffs and other sort of jewelry. The fishermen show up. Tognazzini shows up. It's a great, free, kind of a towny thing, although they're reaching out further for some of the tourist folks to come as well. That's the Maritime Family Fun Day on a Saturday, October 12th. And Charisse, you can carry on from there.
Well, I have a couple of announcements, but I'll start with the Maritime Festival. It's going longer this year, which is great. The Family Fun Day was a great hit, and so they're expanding. And it's going to start Wednesday, October 9th, and with working with the Chamber as well. There's going to be a mixer at the new property, Harborwalk Plaza. That's right at 833 Embarcadero. There'll be food. A lot of local restaurants are going to be partaking in that, and a lot of local artists that contributed to the new building on the Embarcadero. So come on down, check out their merchandise that they have, meet the artists. And that's at 5:30 on October 9th. And then Thursday, he mentioned Rock the Waterfront. On October 11th, there's going to be the Zongo All-Stars launch party at 4. That's a free event. The Family Fun Day is going to kick off and then end with a Treasure Island movie night that the Chamber is putting on. Go to the website for the Chamber, and you can purchase a ticket there. And then on Sunday, October 13th, Chris Lockwood's Regatta. So that should be an amazing week. We have my favorite weather on October. Yes, Chris?
Well, the your thing,
yeah.
I'm making a joke here. That's where Bob's Seafood used to be.
It is.
For anybody who knows that.
Yep, it's been a couple things. But under the Sea Gallery for 26 years. Okay, my next announcement, if I could just piggyback on to the first announcement. Another thing in the chamber news is that the Governmental Affairs Committee had a breakfast on the Bay. It was a greatly well-attended event, talking about all of the attributes of the Governmental Affairs Committee that goes through the chamber. Yesterday, we had privilege to meet the new council members who will be taking office next year. I am happy to report that both unopposed candidates will be a positive addition to our council. Both come from harbor backgrounds and are well-informed individuals who understand the many needs, unique issues facing Tidelands and the harbor areas. They will both be integral in maintaining a safe and healthy harbor that's vital for our Harbor Advisory Board. They have different strategies as to how to keep the harbor budget strong, but the great thing is that it is an important topic to both, and cumulatively, they will help in our constant goal that we have for the Harbor Advisory Board to find new revenue sources. And that's all I have for today.
Thank you, Member Hansen. I'll go over to Member Green.
A couple things. I'm the liaison for the Planning Commission. Nothing to report there. 7 of their last 8 meetings have been canceled, so nothing additional to report from the Planning Commission activity. Regarding Cal Poly, as we might have mentioned once in a previous HAB meeting, it doesn't really have any direct relationship to HAB yet and may never, but Cal Maritime Academy is getting rolled into Cal Poly. It seems as if Cal Maritime, which is a small program out of the East Bay that's been around for a long time, and just enrollment and capacities, they just deciding to from at a high level CSU decision making standpoint, that they're sort of trying out. My sense, this is maybe a little bit of a opinion, but in meetings that I've attended, it seems as if the Cal Maritime role into Cal Poly may be a bit of an experiment for what could be future consolidation of some under-enrolled CSUs. No one's saying anything like that yet, and Cal Poly is doing just fine. Cal Poly sort of positioned itself to be one of, if not the big dog in the CSU realm. But just kind of an interesting thing to keep an eye on CSU enrollment statewide and seeing where they're dipping, and there might be future consolidations. That's it.
All right, thank you, Member Green. I'll go to Member O'Brien.
Yes, good evening. Thanks, Cal. I've been away for 2.5 months, so I'm just starting to catch up a little bit. The Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization is currently embroiled in a lawsuit with one of the wind proponents, and this is the second lawsuit we've had, and we are going forward with that. Our guys have just come back. I see our albacore boats are in town, coming back from up north. The reports, I haven't talked to them, but the reports from up north were pretty good. The price recovered, it was a decent price, and the catch rate was pretty good. So it was albacore, had a good season. We're real happy about that. And that's about all I got right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Member Downey.
Sean, I got a real quick question. Do you have any idea why the planning commissions have canceled so many meetings?
I don't know. I can't speak to that.
Okay. I'm going to get up on my soapbox a little bit. I have an issue with the title Harbor Vitality Director. This new word, uptown, doublespeak, I just can't seem to accept it. Every port on the west side, west coast, east coast, around the world, the person responsible for the harbor's well-being is named harbor master or port captain. Whoever came up with this term, to me, is ignorant and does not show respect for our maritime history and culture. But on a better note, our harbor right now, our bay, is really, really healthy. lots of eelgrass flowing back and forth, which is a good sign. It's kind of hard sometimes to navigate through it. But as we inspect moorings, all kinds of growth, clams, mussels, everything's growing on the chain. So I think that's all real good. And then additionally, I've been asked by several people, what activities do we actually have going on the waterfront? So if it's okay with you guys, I'll give you a quick rundown from north to south. We have our two oyster companies, Morro Bay Oyster and Grassy Island. They made it through all the winter. I mean, we had a terrible winter last year as far as storms and things. But they're up and running with all their new technology. We have good, clean, healthy oysters and fresh. The old Santa Maria Seafood, they had all new pilings installed in that for a couple of $100,000. Morro Bay Landing, their new restaurant upstairs is just doing fine. It's a great place to go to watch the sunset. Harbor Hut, we just got an emergency permit to install new pilings under their dock and pier, their restaurant. And this is going to cost them hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. Some of these leaseholders owners are spending lots and lots of money just to maintain the lease sites. And I think the Planning Commission needs to know just how expensive it is to work down there. Let's see. Great American Fish Company just had put in new pilings underneath their restaurant. The city docks, they've just put in all new city commercial docks. They just put in a gangway just a couple days ago. The Giovanni's Fuel Dock Pier, you probably saw the Miller's drilling truck down through there. They're trying to find bedrock so that they can put in new pilings to support that area. They got down 80 feet, and they still didn't hit rock bottom. House of Juju is doing just fine. The Harbor Center's doing just fine. Anderson Dan's looks like they're okay. The Boatyard just recently put in their new harbor walk and slips. Libertine, they just got their new lease site approval, their planning commission approval. Now they're working through the building permit process, which is going to take probably at least a year. Rose's Landing, they just finished for their new harbor walk. Where am I at here? The Flying Dutchman. They just finished putting in their new harbor walk, and we've got our local Coastal Ironworks rebuilding or making a new fish hoist for them. Let's see, Three Stacks and a Rock, they've got their new lease agreement. They're just moving right along. Gray's Inn have just finished their phase three, and they're looking at reinvesting, adding some new slips or repairing their slips and doing their increasing their value of their property. Gray's Inn 2, which was the old Kayak Horizon, tomorrow I have a meeting with the planning commissioners. We are at an impasse on what the planning commissioners want and what, in reality, that can really happen right through there. And they may just walk away from the project. If that's the case, then it goes back to, the lease will expire, it'll go back to RFP, and then it goes back same round and round again. So something has to break there. The Yacht Club's doing just fine. Estero Inn is just doing just fine. Associated Pacific, they were scheduled for a CUP hearing with the Planning Commission on the 1st of October. That got pushed to the 15th. Now it's in the middle of November. We needed to come up with a new eelgrass plan, even though it'll be several years before we actually look at the eelgrass. And so this is $8,000 for a study that probably won't be worth much. It just costs so much to build down here. The boat launch, the city just rebuilt all the boat launch, or most of the boat launch slips, and the new finger slips through there. Bayfront Marina just finished their lease agreement. State Park, they put in new slips through there. And then on the water side, most of the moorings that were due for inspection are all pretty much caught up through Becca and myself and Associated Pacific. We've GPS almost all the new locations, and in some places we've adjusted some of the moorings or their location and maybe looking at some of the shorter scope of chain there. But more or less, we're ready for winter this time. And last year, we just got hammered. I think I take my hat off to the leaside owners who've gone out of their way to put in, to upgrade their projects, they're putting into their buildings there. You look at Flying Dutchman, and they put in all new siding on their building there, and it looks great. But that was nothing they had to do. They're just proud of their place where they're at, and they're putting money into it. So that's about. Oh, one other thing. I inspected a mooring the other day. I went by, and the shackle was completely undone. It was just hanging on with the pin completely out, and there was maybe a half-inch opening with a 7/8 or 5/8 inch shackle hanging on that thing. It would have just slipped right out into slack water. Wintertime is coming. It's time for you guys to check your pennant lines, check your mooring lines, because it's a lot easier now than later on. Okay, that's my spiel.
All right.
Good job.
Wow, that's more extensive than I've heard for a long time.
A lot of work.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I just, Erlyn, there was one question about the recently a large number of planning commission meetings canceled. I don't know if you have any insight into that.
Yeah, of course, I'd be happy to help explain that. So I'm Erlyn Singwald. I'm the community development director for City of Morro Bay. I've been in my role about 3 months here. So in March, the Coastal Commission certified the city's zoning code update. And the zoning code update was successful in essentially streamlining the permit process for a lot of development types that previously would have had to come to the Planning Commission for a discretionary coastal development permit. And now, instead, an administrative coastal development permit is what's required for these smaller development projects under 2,500 square feet. And there's other criteria, but that's one of the main criteria. So these administrative CDPs that used to go to Planning Commission, they now can be approved at the staff level. I approve them at my desk at the director level. That's not to say workload has necessarily gone down. Of course, it is more streamlined for applicants and more efficient because we don't have to take all of these to Planning Commission, but staff is still doing all of the same analysis, and we're still sending notices out to the neighbors, but we're able to approve them administratively. This also has, you know, freed up staff time to focus on longer range planning items, such as the waterfront master plan update that we're going to discuss this evening. Also, I'm using it as an opportunity to use our Planning Commission time to discuss other kind of long-range planning items. For example, Planning Commission's given direction to our department to have a discussion regarding state housing laws that streamline, you know, housing development and how those affect the permit process here at the City of Morro Bay. And that's going to be the focus of the October 15th Planning Commission meeting. We're going to give a presentation on a couple state laws, so Senate Bill 9, Senate Bill 684. These are laws that require cities to process certain housing developments in an expedited administrative process.
Well, that's actually kind of exciting. I was changing the planning process is streamlined, and so you're refocusing the group on a little more strategic stuff. So hopefully that answers your question, Gene.
I guess so.
Yeah. All right, cool. I don't have any other outreach reporting at this time, so we'll go ahead and move on. Actually, it segues perfectly. We do have a waterfront master plan update, and with that, we'll go ahead and turn back over to you, sir.
All right, great. So, yeah, again, Erlyn Singwald, Community Development Director. This is my first time presenting before the Harbor Advisory Board, so it's an honor to be here and to meet you all. And thank you for inviting me to come speak on the waterfront master plan update. This is I feel very fortunate to join the team at a time where we have an opportunity to start such a significant, like, meaningful planning update process. Kind of set the framework a little bit for this. So I think you are likely aware that the city's general plan and local coastal program was updated in 2018. We call that the Plan Morro Bay. It's the combined general plan and local coastal program. So that's fairly recent. A lot of jurisdictions have pretty outdated general plans. Ours, even though it's 2018, that's recent. And one of the implementation programs in Plan Morro Bay is to update the waterfront master plan. The waterfront master plan is an example of what we call an implementation document. So you think of the general plan and local coastal program as a big picture vision for future growth and development in the jurisdiction, and then that's implemented by these other documents, such as our zoning code and the waterfront master plan. We have applied to the Coastal Commission for what's called a local coastal program planning grant for $750,000 to fund this waterfront master plan update. We, of course, don't know yet if we're going to receive the grant. We're hopeful that we will, and we will know soon because Coastal Commission staff has let us know that it's going to be on the November Coastal Commission meeting agenda. Because the grant application amount is over $500,000, it requires Coastal Commission approval, and Coastal Commission staff is going to recommend approval to the Coastal Commission. So again, we're very hopeful that it will be a successful application and we'll be able to kick off this process. But it's important to point it out up front because everything I'm going to talk about is all contingent on this grant being approved to fund this work effort, because it's a pretty extensive work effort. So in addition to being an implementation tool, I would say the Waterfront Master Plan is also a visioning tool. It's an opportunity to work with all of the stakeholders, I imagine, over the next few years. As we embark on this process, I'll be spending a lot of time here working with the Harbor Advisory Board. I expect to spend a lot of time working with the Master Leaseholders Group, with the Chamber of Commerce, and many other stakeholder groups, and I'm just having general public workshops, and really that's an opportunity for the community and the various experts in these different areas to help shape a vision for how we want the waterfront to develop into the future. So as far as the areas covered by the Waterfront Master Plan, currently it covers four planning areas. It's the Tidelands Park, Morro Rock, the T-Piers area, and the Embarcadero visitor area. The grant application that we prepared is proposing to expand the scope of the Waterfront Master Plan to also include the former wastewater treatment plant site, which is an opportunity for the city because the Plan Morro Bay document also requires a master plan for any future development on the old wastewater treatment plant site. And again, master plan can be an expensive and lengthy process. So by wrapping that into the Waterfront Master Plan update, it provides an opportunity to implement that section of Plan Morro Bay and at the same time have more of a cohesive vision for the whole waterfront all the way up to the old wastewater treatment plant site. So that's kind of the big picture overview. I wanted to now shift to, I think, the main topics that so far I expect the plan to focus on, and based on how the grant application was scoped for this work effort. And I say so far because we're so early in the process. I mean, the funding isn't even guaranteed at this point. And as we start this process, I think it's going to be a little iterative in that we're going to learn from the community, learn from you, learn from other stakeholders on what areas it should focus. But one aspect where there will certainly be addressed in the update is sea level rise. And that actually was, I'm not sure if it was a requirement or it was an aspect that was really necessary to be competitive for this Coastal Commission grant, but sea level rise was a major focus. So it will include an update to the sea level rise projections and then sort of a vulnerability analysis to see what type of infrastructure would be vulnerable to sea level rise, and then adaptation plan, for example, but identifying triggers potentially raising infrastructure along the waterfront based on sea level rise projections. So sea level rise will be a focus. The other focus that really comes to mind is economic development. I really see this planning effort as an opportunity to, or a forum to work with Harbor Department and other advisory boards and stakeholders to discuss how we can partner and work together to streamline development as much as possible. So basically coordinating the entitlement process that my department handles and the RFP process that the Harbor Department handles, and seeing how we can just partner to work together to streamline that process as much as possible. Also, by having a renewed vision for the waterfront area and having more clear, predictable development standards in this waterfront master plan update, I think that should help streamline the process as well, and maybe attract additional investors to the waterfront area. The third component is circulation, and just some ideas, and again, everything is really conceptual at the idea stage at this point, but from a circulation standpoint, the plan could look at traffic flow on Embarcadero Road and Front Street, considering if it would make sense to reevaluate direction of traffic, looking at pedestrian connectivity, are there opportunities for paseos to close off certain areas to vehicle traffic? And I know I'm probably touching on some controversial topics in the past, but again, that's why I preface this as these are just ideas at this point, and some may be viable, some may not be viable, but this would be a forum for that discussion in the future. Of course, also looking at the Rock Morro Rock parking lot and improvements to that area. The fourth component is public improvements and infrastructure plans. So I already mentioned sea level rise adaptation. I'm looking at infrastructure vulnerable to sea level rise and adaptation, public plazas. That of course was a big discussion on the Libertine Undevelopment Project, relocating parking area on the west side street ends, and having a parking relocation plan for that. Maybe more of a comprehensive public plaza plan, possibly a vision for the Centennial Parkway, and incorporating that into the master plan update, and possibly a public art program and incorporating that into the plan. And then the fifth and final topic I have here on my notes is design and development standards, so updated design guidelines. I think that really connects to the visioning aspect, like how do we want the Embarcadero area to appear, just to reevaluate design, or maybe decide that the current design guidelines is the direction that the city wants to continue. And then also development, updating development standards. So those are the, again, main topics that come to mind to focus the plan update on. And then I wanted to talk briefly on process. And so again, all assuming we get the grant from Coastal Commission, we're looking at a 2 to 3 year process, so it's a pretty lengthy process. It would start, let's say we get our grant approved by Coastal Commission in November, then as early as January, we would likely release a request for proposals to hire a consultant, because we don't have all of the in-house capacity and expertise to prepare this document ourselves. So we'd hire a consultant, and of course we'd enter into a contract, and then usually once we hire a consultant, usually there's like a data collection process where the consultant will ask for a lot of information just to start to put together a background report. That I think that process would likely include interviews with different experts, maybe members of the Harbor Advisory Board and leaseholders, just to again become familiar with the important issues to the community on the waterfront area. And then again, I envision this process involving significant public engagement. Usually with this type of plan update, one of the initial public workshops or multiple public workshops at the beginning stage will be focused on visioning, again, to hear from the community to shape that overall vision that will then guide all of the follow-up work on the plan update. So that's the notes I have, and again, we're very early in the process. It's a really exciting plan to work on, and I look forward to working really closely with this group and others on the effort. And I'm available for questions.
Well, I appreciate the insight. It was quite thorough. I appreciate that. I do have a few questions. If somebody wants to go first, go ahead, Gene.
Yeah, I was on the original Waterfront Master Plan group. A couple questions. The scope of the Waterfront Master Plan, is it just on the west side of the Embarcadero, or does it include both sides of the Embarcadero?
Both sides.
Okay. And then the original Waterfront Master Plan did not include anything in the water itself. So I'm just curious. I want to be sure that's included also. Vessel capacity, things like that. Okay.
That is my my understanding. Of course, there's going to be a focus on sea level rise, but it's really just on the tidelands area, not on the bay.
All right, thank you. All right, yeah, I just had a couple of them. Interesting that he worked on the 96 one. I've had an opportunity to read it. I guess the initial question, you know, if you read it today, there's a lot of sort of timely things that were there, but a lot of it, just a lot of the same issues you see in that document that still exist, what, 30 years later, parking, for example, a few others. Do you envision the document to be a similar look and feel? Or I don't know if you've had a chance to actually look at that, the end product.
Well,
is that it?
Yeah. I have my copy. I have not read it cover to cover yet, but I'm becoming more and more familiar with the document. It's difficult to predict at this point. I think to an extent we may be budget constrained to do a complete 100% overhaul. So I think due to budget constraints, it may focus on a similar structure as the current plan, but it's so hard to say at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there was some stuff that I think is fine the way it is, you know, and then there's a few items in there like the second boat ramp and the concession stand right on Front Street there. Obviously, probably won't go South Street going down to the boat ramp. Probably won't happen, but all right. Second question is, it's not really a question, but yeah, circulation. It's always the talk about the vehicle bridge across the creek. It's always the one that, that in hindsight was a bad decision. So that, I'll open it up to other questions. Anybody else?
I have a couple questions. I put in a public comment to council when they were trying to decide on the sort of the jurisdiction. So there were a couple of sites that I just want to make sure that they are included or excluded. It sounds like maybe excluded. So east of Embarcadero, does the waterfront master plan then cover to the bluff line then? Or where does the waterfront master plan end jurisdictionally, I guess, inland? Is it the bluff line? Like, is Centennial Parkway included in the waterfront master plan scope?
So I did look at Centennial Parkway and, you know, 781 Market Street, and I believe they are included in the waterfront master plan as well as the downtown waterfront strategic plan. But
okay. So I guess I'll just kind of assume that it's the bluff line up and down. It sounds like the power plant site is excluded from that waterfront master plan.
Correct. That's okay. Separate power plant master plan with the BEST project.
Because it has its own. Okay. Was it included in the 96 master plan? No. South of Tidelands, because we're sort of on the Harbor Advisor Board focused on the Tidelands Trust area. It sounds like nothing south of Tidelands Park is
correct.
So even though it's Tidelands Trust properties south of there all the way to the state park, it just won't be covered by this particular master plan, but just governed by existing state Tidelands Trust matters and our general plan?
Correct, yes.
Okay. When you're choosing where to sort of draw the line, is it basically budgetary nature or looking at the 96?
Budget is a critical factor. Also, you know, based on California Environmental Quality Act, we're going to have to do an environmental determination on the waterfront master plan update. The goal is going to be able to find it consistent with the EIR for Plan Morro Bay. And as we start to expand the scope of, you know, what the current plan covers, that could make that more challenging. So I think that's another factor as well.
Okay. Given that circulation and the sea level rise is part of the equation, Morro Creek specifically involved in the scope in terms of erosion and how far back it kind of goes in there. I'm just trying to sort of draw the lines.
Yeah, we want to keep the boundaries of the waterfront master plan area contiguous, which means to get up to the old wastewater treatment plant side, it would also cover the pedestrian bridge.
Okay. And last question is, do you envision there being a GPAC equivalent with identified members of an advisory committee specific to the waterfront master plan? We had sort of a dedicated 2-year board or advisory committee for the general plan. I was wondering if you envision something like that.
Envision, yes, although it's difficult so early in the process to commit to that. But again, I mean, public engagement is so critical to the DNA of Morro Bay, and this is such an important planning document. I would imagine that type of group would definitely be assembled and very involved in the process.
Cool. Thank you.
Knowing that you want to do a lot of outreach, one of the things that I was hoping that we could do is create a committee for the waterfront master plan within, you know, just a smaller group of us, 3 or 4, to do a lot of the research and talk about it here. And then because you said that the process, you'll go out to get somebody to do the report, and maybe they would be around February, March, start asking the different groups. So would it be something more than just all of us doing our research, or could we possibly do a committee to research this a little bit more thoroughly, know the jurisdictions, maybe meet with you in a smaller group to get an idea of what kind of recommendations you would want from the advisory board?
So, yeah, again, I think that would be a good idea, and I see things very likely moving in that direction. It's hard to commit to that since we haven't developed yet. Well, we don't know yet that we have the grant. We haven't developed the scope of work that we're going to put in the RFP. What I could suggest is once we get the grant from Coastal Commission at that time, I will develop an initial public participation plan. I can bring that to the Harbor Advisory Board for discussion. And then that could be folded into our request for proposals.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Again, Erlyn, appreciate the presentation. And with that, I think we'll go ahead and close that portion and go to the next agenda item. Oh, public comment. Okay. If there's any members in the audience or on Zoom that want to talk about business matters that are not on the agenda, they can do so at this time or aren't able to stay for the whole meeting. So anybody in the audience want to do public comment? Okay. AGP, is there anybody on the Zoom call that would have their hand raised?
Hi, Chair Byers. There's one raised hand in the queue, which is Kim.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, Kim, you can go ahead and talk.
Oh, hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yes.
Okay, hi everybody. This is Kim Fowler, planning manager for City of Morro Bay. I'm attending remotely from my office space instead of being in the vet's hall with you, so I'm sorry for that. I just wanted to point out one clarification item from Jean. Jean, you mentioned earlier about an eelgrass study requiring $8,000. I just wanted to provide a little bit of clarification. You know, eelgrass is a managed species and it warrants protection. It warrants protection in the form of compliance with mitigation strategies and, you know, based on that, we know these have worked because, as evidenced by what Gina said, you know, the eelgrass numbers are up, but we need to keep them up by continuing to comply with the mitigation policies that are in place. You know, one day the hope is that there is so much eelgrass that mitigation isn't necessary at all. In California, conditional use permits, discretionary permits, they're all subject to CEQA, and under CEQA, the city has to determine whether or not there are any sensitive habitat in a project area. So there needs to be documentation on how to mitigate those impacts. This is where the the requirement for an eelgrass study came up recently for a project. I want to be clear that the city is not asking for an $8,000 survey that's going to be done way too far ahead of a construction schedule to be meaningful. That's not at all what we're asking for. City staff is just asking for a planning survey to demonstrate compliance with CEQA. That's something we have to do. Every project has been in compliance with CEQA up and down the Embarcadero. I received a report yesterday. It was a one-pager. It cost $850. No big deal, but we did need to have that for the files, and now that we have that, we can check the box, make sure we're compliant, and go ahead and get agendized for Planning Commission. But I just wanted to point that out so that everybody knew exactly what we were or were not asking for.
All right.
That is all.
Thank you, Kim. Appreciate that. Kim, I don't know if you're still online. I think there was a question.
Kim, thank you for clarifying that for me.
Thanks, Gene. All right. I assume there's nobody else in the queue, AGB?
Back to you, Chair Byers.
All right. With that, we'll go on to the consent calendar. Anybody want to pull the staff report? One more. I'd like to invite our council liaison. If you had any comment, I can put you on the spot. Anything, any HAB-related stuff from the council you'd like to report on? All right. Put you on the spot. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Zara. Anybody put a motion to approve the consent calendar?
I so move.
All right. I'll second it. I'll say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Nays. All right. Now on to business item B1. I believe we've got Chief McCrane on the line.
Good evening, Harbor Advisory Board. Thank you for allowing me to join remotely. I have a conflicting meeting with our event with my family that I had scheduled prior to taking on this role. So are you guys able to hear me okay?
Yep, you're good.
Okay. So just a quick update. I've been working a lot with Harbor staff, a lot of projects going on. The department has recently hired some new reserve Harbor Patrol officers, Amanda Watson, Jacob Clemens, and Sean Martin. They're going through their training with the crews right now and getting up to speed. So looking forward to having them out and assisting. They also hired a full-time office assistant. Her name is Emily Flanagan, and she's working with Lori and doing a fantastic job. Recently, Becca went to the CMANC conference up in Santa Cruz, made some good connections, and is working on getting a lot of information to help with future dredging projects. Part of what we've been working on is just evaluating Harbor's operations and looking for areas to make minor improvements. Some of the things we've come up with is improving our data collection and changing the way we do case reports, some of the stuff that we write case reports for just to reduce liability for the city, make sure we have accurate documentation, and also just to ensure that we're, keeping confidential information, patient care information, things like that secured properly. Working with Dana Stein, and he has applied to the county EMS agency, which oversees all the EMTs and paramedics in the county and creates the guidelines. And he got the Harbor Patrol staffs registered as a public safety first aid and CPR provider, and also registered as an AED provider. So what this does is it provides some security for the Harbor Patrol staff in that first responder role. As they're providing patient care, it offers some certification and some guidelines for the staff, and just adds a little bit more structure to the program, allows us to look at expanded scope, making sure we're keeping up with the latest trends in the medical for their certification level. We've also added a program called Pulse Point Certified Responder. So the Harbor Patrol officers are able to get all of the computer-aided dispatch notes sent to their phone. So there's times where information is relayed via the CAD program instead of sending it out over the air. If there's, person's name, contact information, and sometimes there might be like a gate code or a key box code that's sent out. And this will allow them to get that information without having to, try to call or request it over the radio. So just another way we're looking at, improving their efficiency. The harbor staff's been, doing a fantastic job, busy on many fronts, and I commend, their efforts with everything they've got going on. With regards to the management level, the Harbor Vitality Director has been posted on the city's website and is actively recruiting. We're going to be doing the first review of applicants here mid-October, and then scheduled to do interviews beginning in the middle of November when the city manager returns from a trip. At this point, it sounds like we're getting a pretty good number of applicants for that. I don't have a specific number at this time, but I know we have been receiving a number of applicants. And then along that same line, I know there was a question about how the director position fits in with the current staff and making sure we're covering all the bases. And we are working with staff to look at creating more of a management team with the department head. And we're looking at creating a harbor business manager and a harbor operations manager position that would be reclassifications of the business coordinator and the patrol supervisor. Again, these are in the works. There's some union negotiations, and the job descriptions have to still be approved by city council. But the employees that are part of this process have agreed to move forward with it. And what this will do is create more of a management team with the new director. We will still be retaining a harbor patrol supervisor position that will be backfilled, and then backfill the harbor patrol officer position vacancy that would be created. So it's adding a position on the patrol side and reclassifying on the business side, which has also just received the full-time office assistant to shore up the business operations side. So we're moving forward, trying to address some of the staffing issues, and we're looking at a lot of other options to address, staffing needs on the patrol side as well. But we're still looking at options and evaluating what's going to work on that side. So those are the big things we've been working on, and over to you guys for any questions.
All right. Thank you, Chief. Any questions?
I just have one quick comment. I wanted to give a nod to the hiring process for the former harbor director. I think the former city manager's choice to incorporate harbor stakeholders in the interview process, once it got narrowed down to a list of finalists, I think really did help that process along, if that's something that's in consideration this time around.
I will definitely relay that to the city manager and the HR manager. I know that they're evaluating the process and trying to make it as robust as possible to ensure we get the right fit for this role.
All right, I have a couple of questions, but yeah, go ahead. Thanks, sorry. Chief, did have a couple questions, actually just one. It's great that we're creating these positions. It's just the Harbor Department has had budget constraints for quite some time. We've had a large deferred maintenance, $7-10 million. I was just wondering, how the new roles and expanded role, are we going to be able to keep up with all the deferred maintenance that the harbor infrastructure needs? It's probably an unfair question. I don't know if you're prepared to answer that, but it is something that I'd like to understand.
Yeah, that's a very valid question. And we are looking at these positions within the constraints of the current budget. There are a few opportunities to, slightly expand the personnel budget to accomplish some of these goals to ensure that we're meeting the needs of the staff to allow, sufficient capacity, which will allow us to, be more efficient on the capital projects and things like that when the staff has, enough capacity to manage them effectively. and have the resources that they need to do their job as well. So we're trying to balance that, and you know, the goal is to continue to look for funding sources to deal with the deferred maintenance and the capital projects. But again, we're trying to take this one piece at a time and look at, you know, staff capacity and ensuring we have the appropriate people in the appropriate roles to manage the harbor effectively, and then be able to continue that on, that progress to deal with the other larger issues.
All right, thank you. Member Hansen.
As far as staff reports, this is probably not a question for you, but I just wanted to get an update. I know that Jean mentioned that the Libertine is working on doing the next thing of a building, and there was one more step that I know that's in there, which is negotiations. I just wanted to know if there's any updates from anybody, any staff, as regard to negotiations.
So we still are in the process of lease negotiation with the tenant or the master leaseholder. I don't have an update at this time, so we're going to be scheduling future meetings with the leaseholder to try to coordinate and come to a final lease agreement with the council.
Okay, thank you.
All right, public, Lori, it's public comment time for this, right? Yeah. Is there any public comment here in the audience for item B1? Nope, anybody, AGP, any hands up?
There are no raised hands in the queue.
All right. Next one up is the Vessel Fee Ad Hoc Committee. See, I'm on it. You're on it. Do you want to give an update? Or
I don't have an update. Yeah. Mary Curie.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Mary was point on that. Last time, I will give an update. During the planning for this meeting, we talked about it briefly, but wanted to sort of reset on that, get direction. We have our last direction statement was from the previous harbor director. Again, since he's no longer here, kind of want to get a direction on how big of the scope of fees. Do we look at just transit? Do we want to look at all the mooring fees, all the slip fees across the board, you know, liveaboard pieces of it? That has a lot of politics with it. Also was curious that, you know, if we look at, you know, how we compare to all the other harbors, you have to do the subjective piece of, you know, the facilities, the amenities that are there, and that can be somewhat problematic, especially if you're recommending a large increase, but then, you know, it has the same bathrooms, the same boat ramp, you know, concrete, those types of things. So just, again, wanted to sort of reset with that. May want to try to meet with the interim one. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I think a reset's a good idea, but I would remind that the concept originally was fees for commercial vessels. And when this subject is mentioned to liveaboards, slip holders, you got a fight on your hands. And so I think the reset should stay with what we do with the bigger boats that are coming in the harbor.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, so probably want to get together with the interim harbor director and meet with, have Mary and the other members of that, meet with him to get some clarification, make sure we're going in the right direction. So that's that update. Any questions from other council members? Public comment on B2? All right, anybody, any hands up, AGP?
No raised hands in the queue.
All right, that'll receive and file. B3 is the mooring field. No significant updates. There is a paper to sort of wrap that up. There is somewhat of a desire to keep it open to the next storm season because we did make some changes. It'd be kind of nice just to leave it open. There's really no pending reason to have it. That paper is just documenting the activities that happened. They're implemented, but we're very curious to see this, if the, was it the smaller scope? I don't have the right term. The 2-to-1 scope changes have any positive impact to the next storm season, because that's really where it comes into play. I don't know, Chris, any other comments on that?
Yeah, to go back to last month, the problem basically involved perhaps 12 collisions. The Yacht Club made some changes. Gene's helped out. This was seemed like a big deal when we first received it. As a matter of fact, when this first came up, we were asked to make sort of a GPS position statement on all of the moorings. We solved the problem for now by making the changes amongst the 12 incidents. And let's see how that worked.
All right, any other questions for that, comments? All right, public comment, this should go pretty quick. Anybody in the audience? No. Raised hands in the queue, AGP?
There are no raised hands in the queue.
All right, that gets us to the last piece. Thank you, Lori, for putting in the future agenda items in there. Makes it a lot easier. What I'd like to do is maybe scratch a few of these off. Unless there's some desire for it. I'm going to just spin through these. The Embarcadero Business District, is that still a thing? Yeah, I mean, I kind of like at some point in the future to see, go through the budget and funding, but that's until we get the organizational settled out. That's not much to do there. That one can probably get crossed off. Is there consensus with that? Aye, okay. All right, looking around the room, that one can get whacked. TOT drive from waterfront to be used by the Harbor Fund.
I think it should stay.
I'm kind of feeling the same. Yeah, I mean, to me, I think there's a couple here that sort of look at funding and budget. At some point, it'd be nice to think about that because I know there's a push and pull between the city general fund and the Embarcadero Tidelands Trust Fund. I think some of that stuff at the surface looks unreasonable. Well, there's that.
Yeah, there's legality, so perhaps there's a committee or something in the future.
Yeah, for next year. Iron Ann Subcommittee, I think.
Goodbye.
Yeah, that's a goner. See you, Gene. Goals Work Planning Process Reform Ad Hoc Committees. I don't even remember what this is.
I don't recall ever seeing it.
Goals Work Planning Process Reform Ad Hoc Committees.
No, it was basically to reorganize all of our subcommittees because none of them had their purposes sort of run their life, and we were going to revisit that.
Yeah, this is thing when Eric was still here, I think.
Yeah, it's a turnover renders these sort of ongoing items.
Yeah.
It's a basic cleaning of house that can happen at the end of the year, and you could just use that as an agenda item for next month.
Yeah, I'll probably just put that on there for, I think we have one more in November, right, Lori? December, okay. Yeah, so December we'll do some house cleaning. Coleman Park update? That would be kind of nice. I don't know if Erlen would do that.
That's probably Greg at Public Works.
Oh, Greg. And maybe that would be a presentation. Be nice to see some progress on that because it's been a couple years since they got funding for it and nothing's happened. Okay, hopefully that one stays. CFAC, Joint Ad Hoc Committee. Who's the one?
There was a push to have ad hoc committees with anyone who will have us, so that we can feel in the loop. CFAC, Planning Commission, Public Works.
Yeah.
I think joint meetings as a discussion point should remain on there somewhere.
Yeah, I think the budget, we did the one lease planning one, and that was fairly successful. We didn't need to read it out like we'd wanted to here in the HAB, but it'd be nice to go over have the CFAC go over some of the budget stuff, especially with some of the controversial topics. So that one stays. Parking, I don't know.
I think it
stay. Eventually it's going to rear its ugly head again, and then Waterfront Master Plan stays. Yeah. All right.
Why?
What?
I'm just kidding.
All right.
Because we need something to do.
Yeah.
That they'll give us.
Yep. All right. Well, I think with that, we're meeting's adjourned. Anything we're missing, Lori? No? All right. Well, thank you all for attending. I appreciate it. And good evening.